Hi, I'm Mindy.
And I'm Tara.
And we are Two Citizen Moms.
It's Friday, March 1st, 2024. Thank you so much for joining us for this special candidate edition of the Two Citizen Moms podcast. Our guests today are State Treasurer and Two Citizen Moms endorsed candidate for Governor Dale Falwell.
Followed by our Two Citizen Mom endorsed candidate for Lieutenant Governor, Pastor Alan Mashburn. March 5th, this Tuesday, is the primaries. It is going to be a game changer for North Carolina.
Stay tuned. These are interviews you are not going to hear anywhere else and share far and wide.
We would like to welcome our first guest, North Carolina State Treasurer and Two Citizen Mom endorsed candidate for governor, Dale Falwell, to the show today. Dale, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's already been a very eventful morning since 5:30, but I'm glad to be joining you.
Wow. What have you been doing other than yoga?
Well, I didn't do yoga. I'm in Winston-Salem, getting ready to go to Lee County, but I was at the Ardmore Barbershop, which is everything in my life that's happened has been within about 3 miles of the Ardmore Barbershop, and got a haircut, and then went and worked early voting at Miller Park Recreation Center, where I used to hang out, and saw an old friend there, and then went to my favorite breakfast place, Zoe's Restaurant on Trend West, and between all that, did two radio interviews, including one with Henry Hinton down in Greenville, North Carolina, and now I'm glad to be with you.
You know what the problem with you is, Dale? You're not busy enough.
I know, and Thursday night, I was the assistant to the amazing Slotik. If you've never seen him perform on America's Got Talent, it's pretty death-defying. I've been racing motorcycles 47 years, and I get more nervous assisting him than I do racing motorcycles. And I'm also his personal assistant at the North Carolina State Girls versus Wake Forest Girls basketball game and in Raleigh on Sunday, and then I'm also the personal assistant on at the Duke State basketball game Monday night in Raleigh. And after he performs, then I do a headstand at center court.
So I literally thought you were kidding about that. Wow,
that's insane. You're a little bit more exciting than we are.
Well, I
don't tell anybody.
I don't think so. But anyway, it's you should see this guy. We're both 65 this year, and he goes, when he's at the very top of these chairs, and I'm the one that hands him the chairs, there's no rods in it, there's no magnets, there's no nothing. When he's at the very top of these chairs, he's looking into the president's box. That's how high he is. And I hand him the chairs, and then he throws them back at me when he's finished. And it's a real adrenaline rush. So you should go and watch the amazing static. Sladek.
Okay. I think we'll look that up. But as long as you're his assistant, I think that's something that has to be seen. If you're not the assistant, I don't know if we want to go.
Yeah. I mean, where do you even go from there? Do you start like doing catapulting gigs or what?
No. Sometimes when you do a headstand, you you do a catapult.
Okay. Okay.
It's never by design, but.
I think people have already been able to figure out why you are our pick for governor.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, you know, I've got the energy of a teenager. I'm not there to increase my net worth or my status. I'm interested in the verb of governing, which is the root word of governor. And I think that conserving should be fun and fixing things should be fun. And that's what I've always done all my life. And I'm so excited about being able to save money, but also fix things like the Board of Elections and DMV and DOT and DHHS and foster care and mental health. All these are cabinet level positions.
Love it. I think when you have nothing to lose or gain, that's a pretty tall order for anybody to go up against.
Yeah. But you know, what's where I find my most optimism, because I've done this before. I did it at the Division of Employment Security. Our quality scores were behind Guam and Puerto Rico, if you can imagine that.
Wow.
I may not get invited back after using this word, but we sucked. We we paid money out to people who didn't deserve it. We couldn't get the money to people who did deserve it during the great financial crisis.
Yep.
And, we catapulted to the top as far as our quality scores, paid off $2.7 billion of unemployment debt, built a $1 billion surplus. And I'm saying all that because there's a lot of people to thank, employers and taxpayers, of course. But the untold story is that when we push the power down to the average, to not the average, the extraordinary state employee, it's amazing the ideas they have on how to fix these problems. And that's what I'm so excited about, is actually pushing the power down to the state employee who have a lot of common sense and a lot of work ethic and a lot of commitment to doing the right thing, and pushing the power down to them. It's just amazing what we can probably accomplish at Board of Elections and DMV and all these other places.
I got to push back on you a little bit on that, Dale. I'm married to a state employee, and I'm not sure how much common sense he has, but I'll take your word for it.
He had to have a high level of common sense to get you to marry him to start with.
Maybe that might be debatable. I have to ask him.
I'm going to have to debate you.
So what you just said, though, was like the perfect lead in to our first question, which we get all the time. So we're just going to go ahead and throw this one at you so we can move past it. You're North Carolina's most successful state treasurer. You've turned $2 billion in federal debt into $1 billion in surplus in your tenure. So why the heck not just keep doing a rock star job as treasurer or retiring to some awesome Caribbean island versus pursuing the job of governor?
It actually is biblical. And it goes back to the book of Mark about getting out of the boat. As a lifelong Republican, I think this is the last time to elect a Republican governor in my lifetime. I'm 65. And I think if we elect the right Republican governor, we'll have Republican governors for the rest of my lifetime. And I don't say that to you or your listeners emotionally or politically. I say it mathematically. As you know, we just elected an unaffiliated sheriff west of Asheville in a red county. As you know, we just elected an unaffiliated clerk of court east of Raleigh. As you may know, in a very red county near Winston-Salem, North Carolina, in just the last 30 or 60 days, 168 Republicans have changed their registration to unaffiliated. The majority of people do not want a name on the back of their jersey, and it's because of counterfeit conservatives. The people my age don't even recognize the Republican Party anymore. The people y'all's age don't really know what the Republican Party stands for anymore, or stands for. The younger folks. And
absolutely,
I want to restore conservatism, common sense, courtesy, humility, admitting when you're wrong, ethics, back to the state government. And my whole life has been saving and fixing as a motorcycle mechanic and anything else I've been involved in. The last answer to that question is, last two answers are pretty simple. As a motorcycle mechanic, I know how to wire things so people can't mess them up. And we have a great staff, and it's not just the $2 billion. I want to remind your listeners, we are in the process of retiring 60% of the state debt, 60% of the state debt. The General Assembly is eliminating the corporate income tax over the next few years. The corporate income tax has fallen by 68% over 14 years. My fingerprint is on some of that, in addition to the unemployment and workers' comp reform. The reason I'm going through that is that there's, even though all those things are going well, been able to cut $700 million in Wall Street fees out of the pension plan. It just got designated as the most efficient pension plan in North America, back to back, 2 years in a row. We just did a fee holiday for our 401k members. And I'm going to put a bow on this. We have wired the treasurer's office, so I don't think anybody can mess it up. I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to go in there and take more risk? Are you going to increase Wall Street fees? Are you going to increase the state debt? See, we've got it wired to move in the right direction. And other than breaking the healthcare cartel, I feel very honored to have been a part of this for the last 8 years. But the last thing and the most important thing is that the boxes I wanted to check coming into the election next week is, do I know who I am? Yes. Do I know who I love? Definitely. And do I know who I belong to on this earth and beyond? The answer is yes. And the last thing is, I want to come into next Tuesday healthier than I've ever been. And I am. I've got the energy of a teenager. I can start at 5 a.m. I can roll to 11 o'clock p.m. every night. I ask God to get between my ears every morning before I get up. But at the end of the day, I ask that question, are you happy with me? Some days he isn't. But I try to make it so that most days he is.
Well, I think that is the reason why we absolutely have endorsed you, gotten to know you, and your track record just as service to the state of North Carolina can be looked up easily by everyone. It is transparent who you are. We obviously don't put our hope in a man. So it's God's will, whatever is moving forward. Tara and I were just talking about that. You know, God always puts who he needs in place, right? He's either going to chastise us if we're disobedient, or he is going to, you know, use good leaders for us. Whichever way it goes, it's always God's will. But we want to do a little bit of a speed round here with you. And as medical freedom activists, our listeners want to know a few, you know, questions in reference to our lane here. And number one, what is your understanding regarding the truth of the pandemic?
My understanding is that, as I said, said publicly, in my observation, I have to be careful how I word that. In my observation as a state treasurer, North Carolina member of the Council of State, that Mandy Cohen and her enabler, Roy Cooper, are responsible for more illiteracy, more poverty, more disease, and more death than anyone that I've ever observed in North Carolina. And there was a lot of things going on down there during that period of time. And as you know, I was my family was planning my funeral during that time, actually. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't patient zero, but I was one of the first people anybody had ever heard of who was as sick as I was, who was in intensive care like I was, and was consuming 8 liters of oxygen while my blood ox level was 82. So let me answer your question. God forbid we ever go through that again, but we're going to handle it differently. Number one is that we are going to convene the Council of State. So if we, using Robert's Rules of Order in a transparent way, and we are going to hear from the Secretary of Agriculture about the food supply. We are going to hear from the Superintendent of Public Instruction about shutting down our schools. We're going to hear from business folks about shutting down the economy. And as a governor of North Carolina, we will never shut down our schools, we'll never shut down our churches, and we'll never shut down our economy again. Now, how can I say something so boldly? The reason is that I was put under tremendous pressure by Governor Cooper and Mandy Cohen to shut down the treasurer's office. Tremendous pressure. I even heard of a rumor while I was in intensive care of the governor attempting to get me removed as the treasurer, because if I'd been removed as the treasurer, he could have appointed my replacement and flipped the control of the Council of State. So I'm saying all that to tell you this is serious business. And the reason we were able to keep the treasurer's office open is with common sense and common courtesy. And I may lose some votes over this, but if somebody wanted to wear a mask, we didn't care. If somebody wanted to be vaccinated, we didn't care. But we had no mask mandate. We had no vaccine mandates at the treasurer's office, and we remained open during that whole period of time.
Well, that is an absolute concern. I mean, we watched people across the state be crushed. North Carolinians were crushed because of these lockdowns, the mask mandates, the churches being shut down, vaccinate or terminate policies and employment, the discrimination against the unmasked and the healthcare and the education system. So I think it's you answered one of our questions that many of our listeners have had is what you would have done during these last 4 years during this period in 2020. Yeah.
And there's two different things going on here. One is the vaccine, and one is shutting down the economy. And you know, I enjoyed working with State Auditor Beth Wood. She's from the opposite party, but you know, she was nearly the tie-breaking vote on some very important issues like the utilities moratorium and things like that, which had the potential of putting 24 cities into bankruptcy. because we have over almost 45 or 50 cities that are actually the electric utility. So when the governor comes out and says you don't have to pay a utility bill, by the way, none of us on this call would have had to pay their utility bill. During the COVID world, people heard that as being forgiven. That's not what the governor said. The governor says deferred. And I can tell you, as a son of a person who wasn't even allowed to have a checkbook in the 70s, that's how bad her credit was. When you tell that something's deferred, and what the governor did not take into account, lack of common sense, is that what happens to utility bills between April and August? They double. Mm-hmm. So when you have to pay 3 months for the utility bills on top of the 6 month of utility bills, and your utility bills are already doubling, I mean, that was just mathematically asinine because it would have blown my mother up. She would have never been able to get ahead. She never got ahead, but that would have just, she would never been able to understand or pay her utility bills, which she struggled to pay anyway, mm-hmm. for a period of time. So it's just things like that. And the story that's never told, by the way, is nearly a million small pigs, a million small turkeys all had to be killed because when the finger was snapped to shut down our economy, we had 54% of the food going to grocery stores and 46% going to restaurants. And by the way, I'm the person running for governor who actually likes math, so I want to make sure my numbers added up just then. And at the snap of a finger, all the money had to go to groceries. All the food had to go to grocery stores. Yeah, we're not set up for that from a supply and chain standpoint. So we will do this. We will approach, if God forbid it ever happens, we're going to approach it completely differently.
And Dale, have you ever been able to figure out what the fiscal cost of all of the government overreach around COVID actually accounts for the state?
Well, let me say that, and I developed this culture at the Division of Employment Security and, of course, at the Treasurer's Office. We manage $240 billion at the Treasurer's Office. That's 8 times larger than the state budget. And at the unemployment agency, that was billions of dollars also. But we had a culture where we focused on the one. If there's one person getting unemployment that didn't deserve it, that's one too many. If one person who did deserve it's not getting it, that's one too many. If $1 is being wasted, that's one too many. So I'll answer your question by saying it's hundreds of millions and billions of dollars. Yeah. But if it's $1, right. Then, you know, that's something that's worth focusing on. I will tell you that you asked me a question, do we ever calculate the cost of North Carolinians and the North Carolina economy? That's kind of a leap in logic because it took me 5 months to get a roll call of how 10 people voted to shut this economy down.
Yeah,
they would not report to me, and I'm one of the 10. They would not report to me how people voted. And we're not going to do that when I'm the governor. We're going to have recorded votes, and people will know instantly how people vote on these important topics.
Let me ask you a follow-up on that. Yeah. Do you believe that constitutionally 10 people should have the authority or even could have the authority to shut the economy down?
It's not the answer you probably won't, but I'm a constitutional governor, and if that's what the mm-hmm. Constitution says, mm-hmm. then that's what it is until it's changed.
Well, do you believe the constitutional rights can ever be suspended even in a quote-unquote legitimate pandemic?
I don't think so. I'm not a lawyer, but my instinct is to say no. But mm-hmm. I will say that when you look at the Secretary of Agriculture, all the food supply, the biggest part of our economy, the CFO, myself, the state treasurer, superintendent of public instruction, the insurance commissioner, labor commissioner, labor, like people not having jobs, Secretary of State, you know, creating new businesses, the attorney general, you know, how people are protected during this whole period of time. I know I'm missing out on other members, the auditor. Anyway, my point is that I think the council of state, given the fact that these are all duly elected statewide officials who have a particular subject matter expertise, I think we're in the right place as long as we can run the program with the highest levels of transparency, we've got to understand that we have to think inside the box, outside the box, use both sides of the box, and that we don't have a monopoly on all the good ideas when it comes to solving any problem, period.
On that note, are you aware of the fact, I'm sure you are, that North Carolina was one of only a handful of what they call red states, that during the last 4 years, there was no call either by governor or by the General Assembly for medical freedom hearings or a summit in which the science was discussed or debated. Would that be different had you been in office as governor during the quote-unquote pandemic?
Yes, and I have said this statewide, and people always want me to elaborate a little bit about what a toothbrush meeting is. A toothbrush meeting is when I'm the governor of North Carolina and you're invited to a meeting, you need to bring your toothbrush because you don't know how long you're going to be there. And because we're not going to leave till we get it resolved. And to answer your question, subject matter experts, scientists who may have a different opinion than what Mandy Cohen had on these topics, our door, our mind, and our heart's going to be open to them, period. And we are going to have discussions around a table in a transparent way where we can get to the bottom of any of these issues. And that's how it's going to be different.
Well, there was no informed consent. I mean, that was the censorship that we saw across, you know, social media, a lot of, you know, news networks in the United States, but they were having hearings in some of the other states. And there were doctors that were flying across the United States. If they could be heard, they were actually being televised.
Yeah. I would, the only thing I can say is that I'm sorry that did not happen in this state.
Mm-hmm. Can we ask you this? If you are elected governor, of North Carolina in this cycle, is it something that you would do retrospectively? Because we still have not had the opportunity to have this debate publicly. And I think you're aware of the fact that we've spent a good bit of time talking to legislators in the General Assembly about having an open forum where, you know, okay, it's been 4 years, but the science supposedly is still not settled. I was just reading this morning, Epic Times was reporting that the CDC is now advising those 65 and older to go ahead and get their COVID shots, while there's a tremendous amount of adverse events reporting, millions, they believe, who've died as a complication of the vaccines worldwide. And if you were to go to OpenVares and look at the injuries and side effects data, it's staggering. So is that something that you'd open the door to in 2025 if you're governor?
The quick and direct answer is yes, but I think you deserve to know why. The reason is that, you know, I'm not the most hateful person or the richest person or the tallest person, maybe not even the IQ person running for governor, but I'm the person who knows what I don't know and has the vision to see, the humility to listen, and the courage to act. And the reason I would do this is that just like being a motorcycle mechanic, everything doesn't always go perfectly when you're any kind of mechanic, especially the CEO of the biggest business in the state. And I would do it as a foundation for, God forbid, we would get back in this situation again, how would we would proceed in the heat of the moment. And that's where I think the value of what you just suggested, I think that's where the value lies. So it's not me just saying, yes, I would do that. Mm-hmm. I do it because I think it would bring value, God forbid, that we would get back in this situation.
What is your position on private sector mandates? So we watched, these Republicans tell us we're going to allow the majority to come in. Once we're Republican majority, then we will, you know, kind of come out and tell you what we think and try to help all of our conservative needs that North Carolinians are kind of bringing up to us. But then all of a sudden they about faced and said, well, we can't really do anything for the private sector. We're just going to push everything to the private sector and your corporations and your private businesses. can basically enslave their employers. They can mandate. Can you hear that back noise?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is on my end, and I apologize.
Oh, that's okay.
Are you microwaving something, Dale?
It's probably a cell phone.
Unless you microwave that Coke, I don't think so.
So the private sector mandates, I mean, the employee was able to push testing, tracking, tracing, sure, masks, and vaccines onto their employers. And our point of view was, how is that any different than telling a woman, well, I'm sorry, you know, you have to take birth control because we can't afford to have you pregnant, or you need to get an abortion because we can't have you on the plan. It's a medical device. It is not body autonomy. And, you know, if you do not have medical freedom, do you actually have freedom? So it's back to pushing all this down into the private sector, allowing employees to control their employer, or the employers to control their employees.
Sure. Going back to something you said 11 minutes ago, you know, God's not chewing on his fingernails about whether I'm going to be the next governor or not, because he knows. But also want to say, one of the most valuable things to come out of this campaign is connecting with you and your calls, to learn more about, how to structure these complicated topics in my mind. And I believe several things. Number one, as far as company mandates, that people will act like they will follow someone who acts like they know where they're going. And that's what we will do, number one. Number two, just like when I kept the treasurer's office open, we don't always need a law to tell us what's right and what's wrong. Number three, I think as far as the private employers are concerned, that, you know, the General Assembly is only in the supermajority, you know, because of people who support a pro-business attitude. And there needs to be conversations about, you know, the private sector not putting these mandates on people. But I am not, as I have said on occasion, I'm not the subject matter expert about whether that's even lawful to say that. Just like when I respond to people saying, will you, as governor, will you prevent the Chinese from buying farmland in this state? I know how I feel about that topic, but what's important, and I think that's the reason we have so many counterfeit conservatives in this state, is they talk about things or they'll pass a law, but there's nobody who operationalizes these things. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well,
I'm on all the voter integrity calls. I mean, a lot of the voter integrity calls are about laws that are on the books and no one's enforcing them. So it's not just having a law, it's having someone who understands how it's supposed to work. I apologize for interrupting.
No, to your point, the conversation that we've been having with Republican lawmakers back and forth now for years has been this question of the private sector, because it almost seems like 4 years later, there's almost complete agreement in the Republican Party that the government should stay out of mandates, but the private sector should be wide open, because, you know, the party talking point is that Republicans don't interfere with private sector. But when we push back and say, but it was Republicans who suspended the state's anti-mask law so that Cooper could mask us, it was Republicans who passed testing, tracking, and tracing, really bringing liability to the front door of businesses. It was Republicans who passed isolation and quarantine by class or category. So for you now to say, you know, as a party, well, we don't interfere with private sector. Mm-hmm. And then we just explained to you all the ways that you carried the burden of COVID into private sector and made businesses fearful of noncompliance, right? We had police forces that were weaponized against businesses who didn't comply.
They were dragging them to court.
Yeah. So it became an inconsistency for us at this point in time to embrace, you know, the party talking point that none of this can be reversed.
And people's jobs were terminated.
Right.
Because Republicans don't interfere with private sector. So that brings me to my next question.
Well, let me just, because I don't want to. And I say this in the most respectful way. Y'all are so wide and deep and such great subject matter experts on these things that oftentimes people just listen to you to hear. And that's what I am so grateful about this relationship with you, is that I don't listen to hear you. I listen to understand what you're trying to tell me. And every time that you speak on this subject, I learn, I get a shortcut in my mind about a clear, better way, not only just to govern, but how to talk about these important issues. So I understand everything you just said, and I agree with it.
And that to us is so important, because as activists that have been engaging with our, you know, elected representatives and officials for these many years, it's been really a hard stop, particularly with the legislature. I think that there has been a hesitancy to accept the consequences of many of the decisions that they made, or to back up some of the bills that were passed. So that brings me to my next question. One of our goals is to find a legislator who will sponsor a reinstatement of the decades-old anti-mask law that was in place and was repealed in 2020. We would like to see all of the overreach bills that passed testing, tracking, and tracing, that passed isolation and quarantine by class or category. We'd like to see all of these bills find a sponsor to repeal. If that happened and we could get a supermajority Republican General Assembly to sponsor some bills that would repeal these overreach laws, would you sign them?
Most people who are asked a question like that, they come back with and say, well, you know, I don't answer, address hypothetical pieces of legislation, or they give you some BS answer. What I'll tell you is that any law that crosses my desk that has the spirit of what you just said to me, that represents the culture that I'm trying to create in state government, which is conservatism, common sense, courtesy, humility, doing what you don't know, and ethics, I'd definitely be very, very interested in signing that.
We do have that bill on our website. Mm-hmm. And I think we may have even sent it to you at some point. I know you're busy, mm-hmm. but there for the reading as well.
Well, thank you. And putting a document like that together just doesn't jump up on the table by itself as a former legislator. So I applaud you know, all the work that you've are and continue to put into that, and anybody who's behind the scenes, General Assembly staff, who's helping you, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's. And I look forward to looking at that. And I think that you will get some champions in the General Assembly that can get that to the finish line.
I think you've answered it, but do you think we can have freedom if we don't have medical freedom, meaning the right to govern our own bodies?
No.
That right there is why Dale Falwell was one of many reasons, actually. I mean, we've already been on 40 minutes. I think it's probably time to let you go. There were so many pillars of your platform, from election integrity to education reform, the economy, jobs, immigration, you name it, where you are the rock star candidate, and so many reasons to get behind Dale Falwell for governor. But
I've got 9 more minutes, so you can keep.
You've got 9 more minutes. Okay. So then I want to go ahead, if you've got 9 more minutes, and jump into a couple of more areas outside medical freedom. I think we've thoroughly established mm-hmm. that you're a medical freedom candidate. Mm-hmm. So let's just move on to a couple of other areas. Next question. What's your position on government oversight and regulation of homeschooling? Whose children are they? The state, the village, or the parents? Mm-hmm. As a homeschool mom, it's important for me to reiterate, I've seen the village and I don't want it raising my children.
Mm-hmm. I'll be very clear, short, and direct. Good government starts at home. Nobody knows their child better than the parents. We need to have systems set up to let parents be parents. But also, and I think you would expect this from me as the CPA and as the state treasurer and the next governor. Any dollar that's going toward any educational service in this state needs to be held to the highest, same level of transparency and financial accountability as any other dollar does. And I don't think anyone with homeschools or other types of school choice situations disagree with that at all. But the fact is this is a very important topic, and you know, we can't get to the bottom of the bigotry of low expectations in our youth, which is my biggest thing that I'm going to be dealing with. I suffered through it all my life as the governor. The bigotry of low expectations means that we have people who can look at certain individuals based on how they're dressed, like I was, or on free lunch, like I was, and determine that or had the IQ that they said that I have. By the way, they told me my IQ was 108, and I've never made 100 on anything. I left the guidance counselor's office ecstatic because I got 8 credit points and didn't even know that was possible. So I say that, and it's kind of funny, but it's really sad because I left there and I spent, you know, barely got out of high school, never took the SAT exam, was garbage collector and motorcycle mechanic, whatever it took with my hands and my back and my feet. And eventually I ended up taking classes at Winston-Salem State and UNCG. So the bigotry of low expectations is a big deal, and it's not directly related to your question, but it's just one of the many things that we need to focus on in public education. But it starts with the platform for me that good government starts at home. Nobody knows a child quite like their parent, and we need to let parents be parents.
So you mentioned school choice. Do you support the school choice, school vouchers, and do you see any traps they lay in terms of infringement on religious freedom? And do you believe it is true that with shekels come shackles?
Right. I think I've answered this in the iVoter Guide and some of the other surveys that I've sent out, that I do think that if you are going to be accepting government money, that everybody should be held to the same standards of accountability for how that money is being spent.
Dale, what's your view of marriage? Who defines it? And tell us about your own marriage.
Well, I checked a box the other day and it said married, and I said very.
And love that.
The person looked at it, she said, I've never seen anybody say that on a form before.
And that's kind of like when it says, what race are you? And I mark it out and put human.
Yeah. Cynthia is, as I describe her, one of those things that's so beautiful in life, they don't have to draw any attention to themselves. They just are. There are a lot of beautiful people in the world, but a lot of them just have to draw attention to themselves. But she's someone who is just beautiful without having to draw attention to themselves and herself. And she's been an amazing spouse, incredible mother. And some of you have gone to our website and read her story. When you read about Dale, there's a letter there from her. The last 25 years, she's been crying inside while trying to make other people laugh. And that's the best way I can describe what an amazing person she is. I will say that I forget, Kevin Bacon is the male of the couple, and I always get his wife's name mixed up. But as he said on Oprah one time, you know, because I think they're one of the longest married couples in Hollywood, he said, you got to be damn lucky, and it's a lot of hard work. So I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. I proffered the marriage amendment bill. I was the only one who invited the Black Ministers Association into the press room of the General Assembly for them to have their hearing about what they felt about marriage. But that bill ultimately passed, became law. That's how I feel personally. But now that's no longer the law. But I think that getting married is an amazing thing. I think it, and having children is a blessing. And that's how I feel about that topic. And I'm the husband of one and the father of three. And that's why I think we're gaining so much momentum in this campaign, is that people are finding there's no gaps between my personal life, my checkbook, my campaign finance life, or my public service life. And people are tired of the drama. They're exhausted. They just want somebody they can count on to actually govern and conserve. And those are both verbs.
Let me just wrap this one last question, just because, you know, you gave your definition of marriage with this LGBTQ alphabet soup agenda. How do we protect girls from boys who think they are girls and want to invade restrooms, locker rooms, and girls' sports?
Well, I was very disappointed. I've talked to the reporter at the Federalist, and she took some clip out of some NBC interview. She questioned why I even talked to NBC News. I said, because they call. I mean, conservatives need to quit running away. Unless you're a counterfeit conservative and you don't know what conservatism is, then maybe you should run away from the press.
Totally agree.
But I don't do that. I've been honored to be the endorsement of the Beaufort Observer, the Raleigh Usen Observer, the Charlotte Observer. In the last election, I'm the only Republican to ever get every newspaper endorsement in the general election, plus the black newspapers. And my point of saying that to you is that the person completely mischaracterized. What I said was, is that girls should be in girls' bathrooms, girls' locker rooms, and girls' sports, period. I don't know how much clearer that can be about that. I am, as you know, in federal court right now as a defendant, because I'm still being forced, regardless of what the General Assembly tells you, I'm still being forced today to pay for sex transition operations with taxpayer money through the state health plan. We spent $2 million on this last year. And this is happening in some of our institutions in North Carolina that are owned by the state government themselves. So there's a lot of hypocrisy about this issue. But at the end of the day, people say, you know, what are you doing on that topic? I said, when you run a multi-billion dollar state health plan that's one of the most insolvent in the United States, you have to do the most good for the most number of people. And that's what that lawsuit's about. It's about, I think it's elective surgery versus medical necessity. The other people think it's medical necessity. So that's how I feel about these issues. And that's how I feel about marriage. And but at the end of the day, only girls in girls' bathrooms, girls' locker rooms, and girls' sports. And I don't want to run out of time, but you know I've been racing motorcycles 47 years. There's 600 people on the starting line in the, what we call the morning race. That's a two-hour race. The pros are in the afternoon. They're a three-hour race. It's a two-hour race, 600 people on the line. And guess who's on the front line?
The women.
The women. And guess who? I hope lapped me before the 2 hours is up, because that means that's one less lap I have to run in a two-hour race. The women. And the reason is I'm in the same race as they are, but they're scored differently. I've been doing this for 47 years. I don't know what the problem is. If people who have that lifestyle or that way of life want to create their own league and compete against each other, have at it. But yep. We should not have boys in men's sports, and period. And
well, yep, I agree with you.
And
100%.
That's how I feel, and that's why if your listeners will go to the iVoter guide, I mean, that's a pretty thorough. You're well. I'm saying thorough to people like you. I mean, that's a very thorough vetting process, and people can see how I feel about these issues. But when you go to iVoter Guide, I'm the only verified conservative, the only one running for governor of North Carolina.
Well, Dale, thanks so much for coming on. We are praying God's will over you and your campaign, and we'll be biting our fingernails Tuesday. Yeah. Speaking of, how do you plan to spend Tuesday night? Are you having a watch party with your campaign team, or a quiet night at home with the family?
No, we're going to be at home. People are going to be, campaign team's going to be dropping by. The major news people know where I am and how to reach me. But there is a call to action between now and then. Any of your podcasters who like what they've heard, if they'll get a yard sign, just go by an early voting place tomorrow and pick one up, put a string around it, wrap it and just hang it around their neck, stand at the polling booth, polling place on Tuesday. We have push cards all over the state, and people just want to be respected on that day and just stand there. It's like a little billboard. You can have, you know, podcast in your ear, have a little push card, and people really want to be a part of the Falwell team, even at the Trump rally tomorrow. They can do that, and that would be the thing that can help me the most in the next 48 hours.
So there it is. Help Dale get out the vote. You can also visit Dale's website at dalefalwell.com. 100% tell your friends and family, Dale Falwell for governor. Dale, yeah.
Thank you.
And that's all for this segment of Two Citizen Moms podcast. We'll be back with our next guest, Lieutenant Governor candidate Alan Mashburn. Thanks so much, Dale.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good.
We gotcha.
All right. We would like to welcome our second guest and Two Citizen Moms endorsed candidate for Lieutenant Governor, Alan Mashburn, to the show. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule.
Absolutely. I wouldn't have missed it for the world. Appreciate everything you two are doing. And your network is just, it's all over the state. So thank you for the honor.
You're welcome. So tell us a little bit about you. Introduce yourself to us. Who's Alan Mashburn?
Well, I don't mean to bore you, but I'm a pastor. I'm a father. We have four children. I've been pastoring in ministry over 30 years now. And we have four children, Zach, Lexi, Haley, and John Luke, who is four. And I'm a strictly America first. I could do a lot of things. I've got a lot of hats. I've got a lot of irons in the fire, but I cannot sit down any longer looking at my children and seeing our freedoms being what used to be chipped away. Now they're seemingly to be incrementally in larger pieces stripped away from us every single day. And I love our country. I love my children, and I want them to have a future. And that's why I'm running for lieutenant governor. But I think that's when we all should be engaged in and be standing strong.
So you actually already answered the next question, which was what made you do something crazy, like throwing your hat in the ring for lieutenant governor? Because we know that the trail is tough and you've spent a lot of time on the road, I'm sure, away from your family and the kids that you're fighting for. What do you think your chances look like on Tuesday?
Well, let me expand on the first part, even though you said I answered it. Let me expand why I'm actually doing this and how I came about this decision.
Let's do it.
You know, let's go back to 2018. We started exposing 2018, 2019. We started exposing the inappropriate and pornographic books in the school libraries.
Yep.
And one thing led to another. The more we found, the more we saw. Mm-hmm. And it just unraveled. And we put it out on our podcast, Carolina Conservatives Preachers with a Punch. We put it out on our YouTube channel. We got banned. We got censored before we got banned.
And wait a minute. You've been banned and censored?
Yeah, go figure, right?
You must be doing something right.
So our First Amendment rights, that goes for everybody on this podcast right here. Our First Amendment rights has been stripped away from us one time or another or all together. Mm-hmm. And so we decided, well, there's no point in continuing, spending all this time and effort if we're going to limit our reach. So we decided to focus on school boards, and we started locally and expanded. So we...
Now, when you say we, you're talking about this network, this association of pastors.
I'm talking about a network of pastors and also my colleague that we started the podcast together, Dr. Nathan.
Gotcha.
He was in North Carolina. Now he's in South Carolina. So anything we do remotely. But
did he move communism to flee for freedom, or was it?
Actually, it was a job. He
gotcha.
He was a professor at Southern Wesleyan University.
What's his name again?
Dr. Nathan Street.
That's right.
And they are strictly anti-Marxist down there. So if you've got any young people looking for a college, university, I get paid nothing for that. But he is there, and they are on the right track. So I commend them. But we started focusing on the school boards, and I think 2 years ago in November, we endorsed and helped 31 of those candidates around, and 27 of them got elected. So then we started seeing some change in policy. And just recently, 4 or 5 weeks ago in Moore County, a county that we focused hard on, that's where I grew up in. And we focused very hard on that. And just 4 weeks ago, we got 4 inappropriate books removed from the shelves of the library. Now, that sounds like a victory, but it's not in comparison to what we have to do. So we don't have time to rejoice in those small victories. We just thank God for them and move on. 2020, we see COVID come. And that's where you two really, really spoke out hard and heavy. And so did we. And my father was having many strokes and had to be put into a care facility around the clock. We didn't want to do that. We didn't have a choice. He had to have that care. Mm-hmm. And March 15th, Emperor Cooper shuts down everything.
Yep.
And we were told we could not visit our father for a duration. Well, May 15th or May 14th, we get a call and say, your father's dying. And if you want to see him, come up here and look in the window and we'll roll him up to the window and you can see him. And I said, that's not happening. So we went in, we demanded to go in. We went in and got 43 minutes. I timed it with my father, of which most of that time we gave to my mother.
Yeah.
So I determined then never again. I determined that some way, somehow we would stand. We called the governor. He didn't care. We were just one of many people. We weren't special. We were just desperate. We called the lieutenant governor's office, who wasn't our current lieutenant governor, but he was still a Republican. We never got a call back.
Yeah.
And so at the same time, he decides he's going to shut the churches down. And so I'm one of the few pastors that signed on to a lawsuit. We sued the governor and we won reopening those churches. So we know how to fight. We know how to win races. We know how to do this. To get to your question, what's my chances on Tuesday? That's a good thing. A good question. I really am not walking and exercising in confidence. I'm praying and working hard. We've traveled over 125,000 miles in this race. And we have put the work in. We have got magnificent endorsements because people see us as being fighters, as patriots. In fact, if you look on that ballot, we are the only name on that ballot who actually have fought for any darn thing. So I am sick and tired of people and their ambitions and wanting to add another rung in their political career. If you're not fighting for children and fighting for the future and fighting for the foundations, constitutional foundation of this country, then shut up and get off.
Alan, on that note, I believe you're also the only candidate, not just in this race, but maybe in any race that we've looked at, who actually has a contract with North Carolina. Am I wrong?
You are not wrong. We have, in fact, I got an email last night and asked me, said, sir, if you wrote that personally, you've got my vote. If you've had a speechwriter write it, I'm going to vote for someone else. My response is this. I wrote it. I researched the job. Mm-hmm. I want to be involved. I want to be involved in every one of those roles. That's a 23-page document that's no candidate has. Every candidate wants to be lieutenant governor, seems like. But nobody has a plan.
Tell us what the duties of lieutenant governor are.
Well, statutorily, he has 14 specific duties and roles. We cover the major ones in there. Some of them are committee positions, like the Capitol Commission and whatever, deals with the buildings downtown or whatever, state buildings. But primarily, one, I would say he has a bully pulpit. It's whatever you want to make the job. But statutorily, he has also a role of being president of the Senate, which I consider very powerful. Now, a couple decades ago, the Democrats, when Jim Gardner got elected lieutenant governor, they stripped that role, much of its power. And there's a reason why the lieutenant governor's office is the least funded mode of government. It's a position of influence, not power. So as president of the Senate, you have that job of being the people's lobbyist and going in there and influencing legislation. You're also seated on the State Board of Education, which totally needs to be revamped. Mm-hmm. And you're chairman of the North Carolina Energy Policy Council. So I look at that like a cold drink of water on a hot day, because I cannot stand these green energy policies that we are seeing across this state.
Wait a minute. You're not a fan of Republican House Bill 951, the new Green Deal?
I spoke out against it. I lobbied against.
Oh, we caught, if you can hear us, we lost your signal, Alan. Are you there, Tara?
I'm here. You want to see if he comes back?
Yeah.
Who comes back?
There you are. We lost you just for a minute.
Oh, right. Well, when you said I lobbied against it and it cut off.
Okay. Well, I lobbied against it as a personal citizen. I've spoken out against it as a candidate. It is the worst piece of legislation that we have seen. It is the reason why we're blaming our utility companies, because of that legislation. And it was bipartisan, and it needs to be rescinded.
It was bipartisan, but it was Republican sponsored.
Yes.
Yes. Yep. Another one of the tragic Republican bills that we've witnessed in the last 4 years. So on that note, Alan, can we talk about some of the other bills and how you may or may not have been willing to use your influence had you been lieutenant governor in the last 4 years and what you may or may not do moving forward?
Sure. Let's go.
All right, let's do it. Testing, tracking, and tracing. That was passed by Republican majority in a budget bill. What say you about that?
I would very much lobbied against that. One, we do not need to attach and take the Democratic stance of attaching things to the budget. If you're not man enough woman enough to put it on its own 2 feet in the House floor, let it be debated. Go to the deliberative process and let the public speak out.
So you don't think that laws that, you know, have potential criminal attachments to them should be hidden on page 423 of an 800-page budget bill?
And absolutely not. That's a
radical thinking, Alan.
That's a communistic move.
Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you. What about, isolation and quarantine by class or category? Another one of our Republican favorites.
You know, class or category is you're not vaccinated, you're not complying, and now you are out.
Well, absolutely, I'd stand against that. That's, again, communism. And that doesn't have any place in our society, specifically America. And, you know, I guess you include me into that. You want to try and put me in that class, go ahead and try.
We'll be in the camp with you, Alan.
Yeah, we'll be in with you. So if you were our lieutenant governor over these last 4 years, how would you have gotten the truth out?
Well, again, I think that role has a responsibility of being the people's lobbyist and going to the public and rallying the troops and saying, hey, I'm your mediator between common sense, logic, and a communistic society. So specifically when you've got Cooper.
100%. But one of our challenges has been, you know, going into 2020, we really viewed Cooper as the issue. But then when we kind of, you know, got a peel behind the curtain,
well,
we realized,
we were meeting with the legislators. Yeah.
And we realized 2020, you know, Cooper is handing down these Stalinistic mask mandates, right, that don't even have a religious exemption attached to them. Which to this day, nobody can tell us why. Why wasn't there a religious exemption attached to the mask mandates when supposedly everybody could get one to the vaccine? But, you know, looking back, one of the things a lot of people don't realize in 2020 was that the North Carolina Republican-led legislature, North Carolina General Assembly, had to suspend the decades-old anti-mask law. In which, you know, common sense, it was actually a criminal offense to wear a mask outside your home because masks do what? They embolden crime. That actually had to be suspended by a Republican majority working collaboratively with the Democrats in order for Cooper's mask mandates to be quote unquote legal. So, you know, what say you about that?
Well, it's either because of two reasons. Either one, the Republicans at that time were completely undiscernible and they bought into the lie. Or two, they were on board all the way at the beginning, or a combination. So
I think at the end of the day, what's interesting is we thought the same thing, Alan. And so now on the other side of it, one of the things that we've done now that it's come, you know, to attention that, you know, scientifically this has been laid to rest. Masks do not stop the spread of respiratory viruses, and they cause 376 plus known human harms. The crime conversation is not even being had. You know, there have been reports from really the mountains to the sea of masked criminals committing assaults, rapes, robberies, even murder. And because they cannot be identified, these crimes are going unsolved. And so one of the things that we've done just in the last year, now that Republicans have supposed supermajority, is we have been asking our legislators, anybody that would listen, can we please have a conversation about reinstating the anti-mask law that was on the books for decades prior to 2020 so that we can, number one, lay this to bed and really get ahead of this ever happening again or coming back around again. And number two, make the streets safe again. Let's make North Carolina safe again. Let's reimplement this thing. We've been told by one Republican legislator after another that to try to reimplement the anti-mask law is a far right position, and that it'll never happen because masks are here to stay. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't like it. And the only thing he's probably right about is that they do not have the appetite to fight it. They don't have the courage.
There it is.
That's the bottom line. They don't have the courage to do it. Now, we saw an increase and uptick in crime, obviously, when the mask mandate, whatever you want to call it, came into effect, because all those videos were released on social media from Walmart of people walking out with TVs and anything they wanted to, they had masks on. So they were covered by the law, in a sense. They had a reason, and nobody could make out their face. And there's criminals out there that have never been caught, prosecuted, or whatever. So come back. We have to have some adults in the room. We have to have some common sense and do away with this idiocy.
Well, there's the straw man argument as well, and I'm sure you've heard it. And hey, you can wear your mask as long as I don't have to. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that is you have children who had perpetrators on school buses in bathrooms. They couldn't even identify other children, and this was happening. So you not only embolden those that are wearing masks, sometimes for nefarious reasons, you're saying, oh, well, if you want to wear yours, as long as I don't have to. That's the reason why the anti-mask law needs to be repealed.
Right. Right. It emboldens the criminals, whatever. The point is, the bottom line is, the mask is not going to protect you from getting even common cold. So the whole crux of the matter was
theater.
Yeah,
the whole crux of the matter was to bring in and train, condition the people into a compliant form.
That's right.
A compliant mentality. And it worked. It worked. And that's sad. And that's sick.
Well, with the schools and you being part of that, I mean, we can talk about vaccines all day long. We understand that we were human rats and the government was experimenting. The blank insert was proof of that. And the millions of people injured and dead. But do you believe the schools or hospitals have the right to mandate any vaccine or medical procedure as a condition for an education or employment?
No, absolutely not. You know, we got the other side shouting over there, my body, my choice, except for us, you know, when it comes to what is injectable into our own bodies. But no, you should never be held hostage by a job or an education. Again, we need to go back to, that goes back to how much of our freedom have been chipped away. The Constitution is a negative document in one regard only. It is restrictive of government, not people.
Right. Right. So on that note, let's jump to abortion, because we have a lot of conversations, obviously, with followers of Christ about the unholy alliance between the abortion industry and the vaccine industry. And of course, 2020 brought to light that, you know, not only were all three COVID-19 vaccines abortion developed and abortion derived, but the vast majority of childhood vaccines are as well. So abortion, are you an abolitionist or an incrementalist?
I'm an abolitionist.
Okay.
I believe that abortion should be completely obliterated.
And so as an abolitionist, where are you in terms of abortion-derived vaccines and medical products? One of the things that we have been trying to engage with Republican lawmakers for 4 years who claim to be quote-unquote pro-life. And by the way, if you're listening to this and you haven't figured out that there's a difference between pro-life incrementalism and abolition, then you probably need to stay tuned or call one of us and we'll have a conversation. But we've been trying to engage in this conversation. How do you call yourself pro-life, but you are either participating in abortion-derived vaccines, believing that there's some benefit, or you're staying out of the conversation altogether? You don't want to use your platform to elevate the conversation to help pro-life North Carolinians understand, wait a minute, we have got a tremendous amount of buying and selling of innocent unborn babies for their body parts, and their body parts are making their way into vaccines that are then being mandated on many, many, many pro-life North Carolinians in both public and private sector. How do we have that conversation?
Well, first, I think we have to go back to a stark reality, and that reality is this is nothing new. It goes all the way back to paganistic societies in history, societies without God. And so this is the same thing that pagans would do. Anytime infanticide is ever mentioned in history or in a biblical text, it is only dealing with paganistic societies, devil worship or occult worship. So how it's winding up into vaccines is their MO. And this is part of being in a godless society. So I go back, you know, it's not just about that. It's about spiritual battle. It's about evil versus good. And it is evil to take the life of an innocent being, a child. That is, life has begun at conception. It is completely hideous to take any part of that being, his or her life away. Having said that, it is beyond imagination to take any portion of that child's poor little body and make its way into any type of vaccine. You obliterate abortion, you obliterate that problem.
Why do you think that so many pastors and so many Christians are unwilling to have this conversation? You are really, I mean, one of the things that really stood out to us about you, Alan, from the get-go, we've all been at this for so long. It's hard for me to think back, like, how did we meet?
Yeah.
But I remember one of the very first interactions that we had with you is we actually had somebody that was engaging with you through Facebook Messenger and asking you these questions as a pastor.
Well, you were unapologetic like we are.
Yeah, we hadn't seen that before from anybody that was in any way engaging in politics, much less a pastor or vice versa.
Right.
Because what we've really been told is these conversations have to stay out of churches. They certainly have to stay out of politics, but they have to stay out of churches because they're controversial and they divide, and we can't talk about divisive things inside the church.
We went to the churches. They wouldn't have these conversations publicly with us when we met with them. And these are
they just said it would split our church, you know, and we implored them. Listen, we believe that this is an issue that is close to the heart of God, right? We are called to speak for those who have no voice, to ensure justice for those being crushed. Who is more vulnerable than life in the womb? And wouldn't you want, as a Christian, as a congregant, to have your pastor bring this to you so that you could be fully informed and understanding? You know, if I go take a COVID shot, or if I go take any number of childhood vaccines and allow them to be injected into my children, I'm participating in abortion by extension of this decision. Why is this off the table in probably 99% of churches?
Well, yeah, I'm a pastor. I've been in ministry over 30 years. My decisions and principles have been set a long time ago, and they're unchanged. Having said that, if my church splits over a biblical decision like this, it needs to be split. Paul said that it was good that divisions.
Amen.
So I don't have a problem with that. I have to answer to God, and I don't have to answer to man. Having said that, the reason why they don't face it is because they fear. They don't have the courage to do it. The Bible says in 2 Timothy 1:7, God's not given us that spirit of fear.
That's right.
He's given us a spirit of power and of love and a sound mind. Sound mind. So
they're not willing to risk their the coffers, the money that's coming through, and their reputations.
And I'm not willing to risk God's favor.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. So you can pretty easily hear why Alan Mashburn is not just our endorsed pick for lieutenant governor, but he is truly the righteous pick for lieutenant governor. And honestly, every time we spend time with you, talk to you, read your platform, even hear about secondhand conversations that people have had with you, I'll tell you what, I know that Tuesday outcome is God's will. Mm-hmm. We're going to accept it no matter what it is. But you are one of four candidates in this election that if you do not cross through the primary, I personally will cry. I'll be okay. But
you two know my love and respect for you, and that will never change. And let me say this, this job, and that's what it is, it will not define me or break me if we do not make it across the finish line. Now, we have run to win, bottom line. We have run.
You know what you've done? You know what you've done? You've elevated obedience over outcome, which has been our battle cry for 4 years. Obey God. Yep. Trust him with the outcome. So here's the truth, Alan. No matter what happens Tuesday, you've won.
Amen. Yep.
Well,
to learn
no
more
matter
about
what
you,
Tuesday, we keep fighting.
That's right.
We keep on fighting.
Amen. Tuesday, March 5th, go out and vote for Alan Mashburn. Tell us how they can find you.
Find us on the web at Alan, A-L-L-E-N, Alan, the number 4, NC.com, AlanForNC.com. We have some lively interaction on X. That is Mashburn for NC. And, of course, same handle on Facebook.
Thank you,
Alan. We couldn't thank you more for spending time with us, for being the man of God that you are, for stepping up, throwing your hat in the ring. What a privilege to know you and to call you our friend. And we will see you out there on Tuesday. We've got people out all over Johnston County that have got the sample ballots with your name on it. We're doing everything we possibly can. And
Lake County and all right, other counties.
Yep. All right. Until then, we pray and we fight on.
Amen. Thank you, friend.
Thank you.
Thank y'all. Love y'all. Bye-bye.
Love you too.
Bye-bye.